What's fun about watching drag queens on reality TV and on the internet is how we struggle when it comes to comedy. Camp is an aesthetic, style, and sensibility that regards something as appealing because it's bad. And when your favorite drag queen bombs on stage, it's still funny as hell.
Today, comedian and improv teacher Meg Grunewald joins us to take a look at the unique demands drag queens have for comedy and how they transform failure into something she-larious. Plus, cheesing, the act of tossing a slice of cheese on your baby's face, is the new viral rage.
Was Lucille Ball a pauper's pig?
A new website in Spain showcases secluded spaces to hacer el amor.
And elderly folks are complaining they might die without seeing the Mueller report. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of the support of fierce, fabulous people like you. Become a member and listen to 14 years of amazing podcasts at feastoffun.com/plus. Or put a tip in our tip jar and make a one-time donation at feastoffun.com/donate. Thank you for your support. You like it hot?
I like it hot.
How hot?
I need it hot. This weather is killing my soul.
Well, spring is, we've finally busted through to 30 degrees, and it feels like it's springtime.
It's supposed to be 60 by Thursday.
Is it really?
And then it's going to go back to 40.
Beach time.
I know.
Springtime for drag
queens.
Break
out your bikini. Let's go to the beach.
You know, one thing that's making the slow winter months more tolerable is all this great drag queen television. Shows like Cooking with Drag Queens.
Coming right around the corner.
Just weeks away. Days away.
Days away.
We still haven't got a clock. We don't have a countdown clock, but it's coming. And of course, RuPaul's Drag Race.
Mm. It sounded like you were going to say a cock down clock.
Cockdown clock.
Ooh. It's like a big dick touches the little dick. It's just like,
that'd be a good app to have. You have a little app, a little countdown. You get a little piece of ash. You'd be like, okay,
I'm ready.
Till I get the next one.
Yep.
Till I get the next one.
Tick-tock. Like 60 tick-tock, minutes, tick-tock, but with dick at the end of it.
Tick-tock.
Not at the beginning of it.
Tick-tock.
So with drag queens being on television, there's a lot of conversations about comedy challenges or acting challenges. On RuPaul's Drag Race, they always talk about, you know, acting challenges. And really what they're doing is giving 12 people who have no experience, very little to no experience in memorizing lines or even performing scripted anything, and then asking them to be funny. And that can be really entertaining. I think, you know, drag builds itself on failure and embraces failure as a form of entertainment as much as it does success.
You say that a lot. Why do you feel like though drag is built on failure? What's the core behind that?
Well, I'll get to that in one second. Okay. The quick answer of that is because drag is very different, say, than theater, comedy, or ballet, in the sense that it is an anarchistic art form. It is a art form of the oppressed and marginalized. And part of that is we're redefining what funny is, what is entertaining, and what is humor, because sometimes, you know, being good at something requires money to take classes in it, right? And for some people, it's like there's a need to talk, to communicate, to entertain, mm-hmm. for communities to come together. And I think drag is very powerful because it allows communities to entertain each other without necessarily having the skills to do so. Mm-hmm. And so when drag embraces failure, it's tied to camp. It's about understanding you're not the Queen of England. You're not this glamorous woman in real life, but you know what? You're awfully good at giving us the illusion of that. Or when you're not able to give us the illusion, it's hilarious because in your mind, you're thinking you're this, diva, but you're actually just, you know, trailer park trash in a tiara. And so in conversations about drag and comedy, I always want to talk to people who live in both worlds. Our guest today is comedian Meg Grunewald, who you heard her voice 5 seconds ago. And Meg has a lot of a background in not just in entertainment and comedy, but you're also well known for being a drag queen and performing in clubs, and also for your Vine videos back when Vine was something. You were a Vine superstar in the day.
Sure.
And so in terms of like drag and comedy, like what What do you say to like somebody who says like, I'm a drag queen, I want to be funnier, but I don't know how to go about doing that?
Well, I think deciding like what's the point of view of your drag queen, that helps, because your point of view is going to help make you decisions. It's going to help how you speak and all of that, like how you respond to things. And basically acting is just reacting. So if you know that your character, gets very flirtatious whenever something's mentioned, well, then that's the game that you play for yourself with your character, that anytime somebody, is ordering a beer, you're suddenly like, oh, well, someone's thirsty.
One thing that I think people coming from traditional theatrical backgrounds or performance backgrounds have a hard time wrapping themselves up is the way drag blurs the lines between fantasy and reality. Mm-hmm. And it blurs the lines between of gender. It blurs the lines of your identity, mm-hmm, and your theatrical self and a character that isn't real. For drag queens who are trying to get into comedy, it's really important to understand not only who you are, mm-hmm, but who your drag persona is, yeah, if in relationship to your true self.
Yeah, because I mean, I with my characters, some of them, were kind of more direct ties to me, and then some of them were very far off of me. However, they were all kind, they're all kind of me, but I'm saying like I didn't really do a ton of characters that were like mean. Because mm-hmm, I don't think of myself as a mean person, but there is a character that's like, she's got huge lips. She's almost looks like a drag queen, but, and she's got incredibly large lips, and she just looks like an Instagram, kind of Insta model. Yeah. Pouty, like selfie queen. And it's like, that's probably a facet of me. I've always wanted to wear the sparkly, like really sparkly shoes and those like, dresses in the quinceanera stores, like the big, like the diamond where I'm just like walking in like a disco ball and everyone's like, huh? And it's like, I got my pretty woman moment, but it's also, I'm in like, yeah, jeans and like, but I think most people would be surprised that I'm like, I want to wear sparkly shoes. So that's why I like to do drag, because I like to do like this heightened, I love the higher the heel. Like I love to tower over. I've always been fairly tall, so I like to tower over and just sort of like, how can I get
intimidate physically?
Yeah, and tap into that like girly, mm-hmm, high glam side if I want to, because that's kind of not who I am, but there is a part of me that's that. So,
because you're a tomboy.
I'm not a tomboy. I mean,
you're Butch.
I'm not Butch.
I thought I was him, and everybody called me Butch.
What am I? A pool dagger?
Yeah, I'm just.
I was like, no. I mean, I think I guess I'm more on
so
the.
So you're soft Butch, we'd say.
Sure, I get, okay. These are new terms for me.
Okay.
Is it my motorcycle jacket? Is that what it is? But it's got a feminine touch.
Yes, exactly.
No, I'm definitely, I like femininity, but I also, I think, I don't like weakness, like where people are just like, I can't. Sometimes in improv shows, we'll go over. I'll say, hey, hi, can you give me a cereal? And she'll be like, oh no, and she like looks to her husband or like whoever her date is. And she's like, oh, you say something. I'm like, bitch, I said you. Hello. Use your voice. I'm giving you a platform here, sister. Like, use it. And so I just like I understand people. It's people's personalities and not linked to gender, but like just meekness. I'm just like, it's so exhausting. So
well, they're going to inherit the earth, according to the Bible.
Oh, you're right. Well,
oh, yeah, the meek shall inherit. What does that mean?
Is that in the Torah, though? Because that's the only book I follow. which part is this meek?
It's the Beatitude, so it might be the New Testament.
Oh, well.
Okay.
I could Google it, but I'm too lazy to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, roundabout ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just, your characters are facets of yourself,
Well, but when you're doing drag though too, is like, cause you see an actor up on stage and he's embodying that character and stuff like that. But there's just like, there's something different about drag because you still know it's a man in a dress or a girl in a dress or
sure.
In a
but
dress.
I mean, it's like, then the question I ask is like, does your drag character know? Mm-hmm. Does your character know that you're dressed up? Mm. Or is this just how they live their life? You know, because some people, it's like they embrace that. It's like, yes, I'm. They're referencing what they're wearing, mm-hmm. and da da da. And it's like, is that just your character, or are you being yourself, like, commenting on yourself?
Some people, like, they're like, I'm a man in a dress as my character. Yeah. Some people are like, I'm a woman.
Yeah.
Where somebody like Alaska 5000 is like, I'm not a man or a woman. I'm an alien.
But I would, yeah. And it's like, that's, if Alaska Thunderfuck was a separate person from her creator, what would she say she was? And I think that helps you go forward. What is your character on stage know about themselves, right? Like, that's the key to doing any acting. You like, what do I know about this other character in the scene with me? How do I feel about them? So you should know that about a character that you create about yourself. Like, do they think that they are pulling this off, or do they think this is their best way to perform art, and they realize...
Are you talking about Jussie Smollett now? What's going on?
Oh, my God. I'm not... 10-foot pole. I don't touch that.
Well, it's interesting the way we think about drag has evolved through the influence of film and television.
Oh, my God, yes.
And whenever we think about drag queens in movies, you know, in the past, there's sort of like... You think about, like, Dr. Frankenfurter from Rocky Horror. He was an alien. They were an alien who just happened to be this way, but uses the terms transvestite, transsexual.
Yeah.
And those were also words for their home planet. So was everybody in the planet transsexual?
Transsexual, transvestite.
Were all gender non-binary, gender fluid, shapeshifters?
I mean, pretty progressive movie for the 70s,
or was it the
right?
only way they could translate it into English?
We
don't know, but so there's this concept, right? So, and at that time period, a lot of people were using these elements into their music, into their bands and the performers. So, like, someone like David Bowie, or a lot of glam rock queens, performers, musicians, didn't use the term drag, but they certainly, you know, you look at Dee Snider and Twisted Sister, by today's standards, that's a drag queen, right? And then so we get into the height of the AIDS crisis, I think, presented a really good opportunity, one, for queer culture to be mainstreamed. And then we started seeing the popularity of RuPaul and the film like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, we started seeing the drag queen as a construct of the nightclub into film, right? And so...
And the Birdcage.
Well, when we see drag... I think Birdcage and Priscilla, Queen of the Desert portray...
And Tu Wong Fu.
And not Tu Wong Fu. Portray gay men as... Or people, you know, cross-dressing to entertain. Tu Wong Fu had a really tricky... A double problem, because in the opening scene of the film, you see Patrick Swayze and the other actors,
John Leguizamo, Coco Peru.
No, you don't see Coco Peru. You see Patrick Swayze, Wesley Snipes, and John Leguizamo putting on makeup to become these drag queens. And for the rest of the film, when they go to bed, when they're using the bathroom, when they're taking a shower, they're always in drag, always in
costume.
Which
makes you think that it's more of a trans movie than a drag movie?
It's confusing. It's like, what is a drag queen?
I got you. Oh,
Spielberg.
I see. You're just saying to the confusing
He doesn't
thing.
Understand, right? Gotcha. And so we don't want to see that pop bubble popped. And someone like Lady Bunny, throughout the course of her career, she has gone through extreme lengths and measures not to be photographed, not to be seen. And amazingly, her friends and fans have not betrayed her. And it's very difficult to find photos or images of Lady Bunny out of drag.
You can find them out there, but they're very
don't go
very
hunting
rare.
Though. Respect Lady Bunny. Leave Lady Bunny alone.
And that's pretty much why she just works a glory hole, so that you don't see the face.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I mean, you know, my mom was,
your mom does photography.
She was a stylist, and so I grew up around, you know. Around gay people. I saw Hairspray when I was like 9. I saw gay films, people around the code I used to go, Mom, is he married? That was my code for is he gay? She'd be like, no, Meg, he's not married. I'm like, interesting. Okay. But like, I saw, you know, it's like, I knew who Divine was by the time I was like 8 or 9 years old, you know? So I've been, just sort of understanding of the fact that drag and people's like need to sort of explore that side of themselves as just sort of commonplace. So, you know, I guess I'm very thankful for that because I see our like world progressing, right? I mean, we have drag queens on television competing in reality shows, like,
and making good money
and making good money. Yeah, show. I mean, and doing shows, and I mean, you have people following. And I do think that that is a good side of social media, is because it has helped a lot of people like realize their calling or their crowd or their people, their tribes, what have you. So, you know, but to me, I'm just like, oh, this has just been something that's just been coming out of the woodwork more and more as the years have gone on. But, you know, it was always in my world. I always was into dressing up and understanding of, you know, that, I mean, I also thought all people that did drag were gay because of what you see. However, now you understand, like, oh,
it's opened up,
and there's a lot more people. And, you know, I mean,
we're inviting more people to the party.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's like me, I'm interested in trying to do do drag king at some point, just because I don't know. I feel like I've been commented that I play a very realistic male character when I'm improvising, which I guess is just I play
see
a good
doing
human.
Some drag king. You do very good
yeah,
at
it. Yeah. I think I got some good, sexy moves. I was thinking a little Bruno Mars, maybe. I don't know.
You
got
to take the breasts.
I know.
You take the tape, pull them to the side, right?
Yeah.
And then you tape them to the side, and then you draw on new nipples.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
That's
I'm going to make some gum nipples.
Like, when I first started seeing drag kings, like around the turn of the century.
When there were bustles involved. And
around 2000, 2001, 2002, you know?
Yeah.
It's like they didn't do that so much. And so that's kind of been a big advance in the world of drag kingdom.
But I think, like, you know, I think I could use my sort of, it's like, you know, it's fun because a drag queen, I like hype it, you know, heighten my femininity. But like a drag king, it's like I can sort of play up my soft butch to make it a little harder.
Well, just don't shave your face for a couple days.
Oh, yeah.
Don't pluck the eyebrows.
Well, and I think, you know, in terms of the comedy world, it is still a very heteronormative space. There's a lot of conversations about making, gay bars or queer bars more inclusive to everyone. But I don't see as much of a conversation about comedy clubs or improv theaters.
I think you're not correct.
believe me.
Well, there's a lot of
changing.
But what you're saying is that you don't see the efforts, and there are efforts.
There's efforts.
The theaters
absolutely
that I perform at have made
but
big
talking
efforts to try
a
to
lot
do that.
Of, the, listen, we've done this show for 15 years, honey. We've talked to a lot of comedians, a lot
now,
of
have
LGBT
you
talk, artists.
When's the last, like, I'm just saying recently.
And those efforts are being made recently, yes.
Okay.
But in the course of the history for a lot of people who are in comedy, comedy spaces have been usually
male dominated
heteronormative spaces.
Sure.
And so for a lot of people, those needs are not necessarily being met. And I think that's changing, as you very passionately pointed out. But that's something that's starting to happen and is not yet. It's a promise that's not yet fulfilled, but they're trying to.
Yeah, I mean, there's four years there have been teams. There's Gayco, right? I mean, that's a subset of Second City. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's definitely teams forming. There's a lot of, there's various trans performers that are out there. I mean, you know, we're becoming, just a more diverse, community. And I think it's because, just the people, I mean, I think the politics of our world have helped that, because I think, you know, improv is this place where you can come and pretend and play. I mean, we're adults making believe, we're playing pretend. And for, you know, when you live in a place where it feels like you're living in a fantasy weirdo improv scene every day, you know, I think that it, improv spaces have become a lot more open to trying to diversify and welcome all those, because we understand that, like, this is the place where you can express those frustrations amongst people that support you, but also this is a place that if you want to just not think about all that stuff, you can come and play one half of a butterfly's wing and we can see that and have a great time.
There is no shortage, especially on the show here, Feast of Fun, to find comedians who feel dissatisfaction with the venues and opportunities that are presented to them because they're a minority of some kind. And I think in some ways, you know, that presents a great opportunity for growth. And I think a lot of these improv and comedy spaces are growing into that. And I think that conversation is really exciting to have because now we're starting to see influence of other perspectives into comedy. And I think that's why in social media, like if you're a disadvantaged person or a minority of some kind, your voice is much more interesting to see because we don't see it in the mainstream, right?
Yep.
And I think, you know, even in Saturday Night Live in the last decade, we've seen an increase in diversity of types of actors that get cast on that show. But when I see on RuPaul's Drag Race and I'm watching in this season, again, it's like the drag queens usually don't seem like they're prepared for that.
Yeah.
They're, you know, you look and part of that, that's the appeal of RuPaul's Drag Race mm-hmm. is that we're seeing people who are not necessarily not ready for prime time again.
And that's a big complaint that Lady Bunny has, you know, said throughout the years is like you're having this challenge, this contest, you know, and you're asking drag queens to do things that they're not necessarily at the core of what a drag queen is. Because some people feel like drag is you get up on stage and you lip sync to a song.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's comedy, whether that's how it, that's what drag is. And so if you're asking somebody to do a cooking challenge, if you're asking people to get soaked by a hose, then it's like, is that really in the domain of what drag is? You know, but also, you know.
But a snatch game is doing drag. That is, like, to me, that's a fair challenge kind of thing. Like, because you're building a persona that's original to you, you should know how to also be able to build another persona. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and a lot of drag originated in impersonation of celebrities. So, you know, that's almost you as your duty to pay homage to to that type of, you know, that kind of drag life. But yeah, I mean, I don't
and
like
there's an art form. There's techniques and skills in, say, the same way that Saturday Night Live characters, I mean, that actors develop characters based on Trump or, you know, Barbara Walters or something. That's the challenge that drag queens are being asked to do.
Yes. But
and,
I think
and that, they don't have, they've never taken an improv class and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, if you want to, I mean, if you're trying to do this, like, you know, you deciding what, you know, what celebrity you look most like to start with. Do you have a voice? You know, like I told you, I was working on my new celebrity impression and like, and it's just because it's actually closer to my natural person, but it's enough like the character that it's believable. And you're not like, Matt, you're just doing your own voice, but saying the words.
Well, part of me is like, I always liked it when people sort of fail at celebrity impersonations as much as
sure, but
when
they walk
succeed.
In so confident and you're like, really? Is that how you see the character? Because that's not how the character sounds at all. Like, are you hearing the same? You're hearing, it's like, I'm saying, and you're going, it's like, no, let's try again.
That's hilarious.
That's the joy of reality TV.
The reality of just like, but I'm saying there's that person, do they know that they're going to suck at this? Or are they going in like, I am the best. And then it's like, who told you that?
Well, that's why we watch the, you know, the American Idol auditions, right?
It's there's a new American Idol, but do they have the auditions in it?
I have no idea.
I'm like,
I lost
the
trust in the
crap
show, but you know, in the early days of American Idol, what was really fun was seeing this pompous British guy, this music producer, and this, you know, drugged out 80s pop sensation wincing at the arrogance of a person coming on stage with a lot of personality, trying to sing a song that we're all familiar with. You know? I mean, that's William Hung was his name?
Yeah, where is William Hung now?
You know, he became a star because he couldn't sing like Ricky Martin, and he dead in his heart believed that he was Ricky Martin.
Sure, okay. So then I hope that all, but that's the thing. I'm like, if you're going to be on Drag Race and you're bringing your thing, because you know you watch them and they're like, I don't know, I'm going between this one and this one. I'm like, then you don't really know who you want to do, because you should be like, this is my character.
This
and you know what?
Am.
Either it's you're doing your best at it and it's still really bad, but you're like, I full on am like committing to this because this is the best I got. Or you're going to half-ass it because you're uncertain. And that's, I think that's sort of like the fine line of when I'm watching it, where I enjoy. If I think you're, and this is the same with improv, I feel like you're on there on stage judging yourself and questioning every move and feeling bad. Oh, I'm so sorry. It's make-believe, right? But if I see you just like playing and having fun and making a mistake and calling somebody the wrong name and like getting mixed up, we're into it. We want to see that. We want to play with that. So I think it's the difference for the actor themselves. What do you think of your own performance? Because I'm going to tell you whether you think you're doing a good job or not.
Sure. And so in terms of preparing to develop a character like that, what can somebody really do besides just sort of like, I am Eartha Kitt?
Well, like I said, you know, find somebody that is maybe close to your stature. Like if you're a bigger queen, find somebody who's bigger, because you know what? All these skinny little bitches can't play those characters so easy. Mm-hmm. So find somebody that maybe goes with your body type, or someone that goes with your vocal range.
Sure.
Maybe somebody whose look you just know you can rock, or somebody who doesn't have, you know, they have a very easy personality to try to channel through, but maybe not a distinct voice. You know, I'm starting to like plow through Arrested Development, because I never really fully watched it. And it's like the mother on there, Lucille, she's just a certain kind of character. But you don't have to do her voice exactly to get exactly what she's trying to do. You just need to get the cadence and the type of shade she throws. You know, it's, you could do her voice a little higher or you could do it lower. Mm-hmm. We're still going to believe
it. But you're in the ballpark.
You're in the ballpark. And that's what I'm saying.
Just
as long
for the
as
record,
you're in the
drag queens out there, Lauren Bacall's my gal. Don't come for her.
But they like, already did.
They already did. It's just crazy. Like, so we, for years, we've been, you know, talking about Lauren Bacall's High Point coffee commercial. And the thing about doing Lauren Bacall is that it's an easy character for drag queens to do.
Because it's so low.
Because you just talk, you know, like yourself, you know, you're like
Whiskey and cigarettes,
you know. This is Lauren Bacall. You think coffee and sleeping don't mix? They do if it's High Point, you know. And that's all you gotta do is just be this. You know, I think that's why Joan Crawford works well, too,
yeah.
Right?
Well, she's intense and she's dramatic.
You know, Sunset Boulevard, yeah. Norma Desmond, you know, you're like, these characters, Betty Davis, get done because they align so well with somebody who sounds like, you know, Miss Vanjie, yeah. Danny Trejo in drag, right? And so,
have you heard Miss Vanjie?
Miss Vanjie sounds like this, you know.
Danny Trejo.
It's like Miss Vanjie.
I just pictured Miss Vanjie. Andy, I just heard pictured Danny Trejo in track, and that was.
I would like to see the real Miss Vanjie and Danny Trejo working on like a
in the same room. I think they're the same person.
In an ad for Doritos or something like that.
When you're hungry, as hungry as your daughter.
Yeah, you got the chips.
Yeah. But I think, I mean, for me, like, okay, so the celebrity impression that I'm working on is Natasha Lyonne.
Adore her.
Natasha Lyonne.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so she, you know,
somebody's
she's from,
ears are ringing.
She's from Slums of Beverly Hills. She's from the new Russian Doll.
And of course, the most important
the
movie that she's ever been in.
Which is what?
Besides Get Me Out of Here, I'm a Cheerleader.
Oh yeah.
Is All About Evil, our good friend Peaches Christ movie.
Oh, it all loops back.
Listen, so, Natasha Lyonne's career was rebooted, I would say, yeah, because of all because
she
about
had
evil.
A little downturn in her career because of personal issues.
Yes.
And her first movie coming back was All About Evil.
Oh, well, there you go.
You know,
but you know, for me, she's an easy one to do because she's Jewish and I'm Jewish and I got a low voice and I can kind of do this kind of thing to the side of my mouth. You know?
And I was talking to Joshua last week. I'm like, when did Natasha Lyonne start talking like an old Jewish man?
She sounds like, you know, she's like a Bernie Sanders, you know? She's kind of like not satisfied. With, she's like, where's this bagel? Where's the rest of the
hole? Talk about the 99%.
The 99%. I mean,
1%.
The 1%. give me a cigarette, I'm leaving.
And he said she's always talked like that, but, you know, as an actress, she's had to put on, like, that's her natural, basically her natural state.
I mean, if you watch her in Orange is the New Black, she's like, I'm stuck in here being a lesbian. I'm in this movie being a lesbian. But I don't think she's a lesbian in real life.
No, I don't think so.
She just has that soft butch.
Like you.
Well, I wouldn't say soft, but she's got the old Jewish guy thing going on.
So anyway, so
like
she's...
I feel like she's like reincarnated from one of the, like the...
Mark's
the
Cats.
Stooges or
she's
Mark's
from the
Brothers
Cats,
or something.
She's from the Catskills.
She's definitely Catskills, yeah.
Yes.
But so, I mean, like, for me, that's a fun impression because, A, I naturally am kind of like that, and all I have to do is kind of switch my voice up, and people are like, "Whoa!"
How are you gonna do the hair? You got to do the hair.
I have a wig.
You have a wig,
and I'm gonna wear
that
an oversized.
Hair is intense.
Yeah, I have a big curly wig that's big, and I'll wear sunglasses and a.
Are you gonna wear the orange jumpsuit?
No, I'm gonna wear my overcoat because I'm going as Russian Doll.
Oh, Russian Doll!
Yeah. But isn't it exciting when you find that celebrity impersonation you can do?
Oh my gosh, yes! Because everybody
feels like it feels like when you're trying on jeans or shoes that don't fit.
That's right.
And then you find one and you're like, oh, I feel sexy. I feel powerful.
Yeah.
I feel like I could take on the world.
And that's why you have to find you know, it's not just the look. It's like if somebody's look is intriguing and that looks fun, cool. That's a definite thing you want to impersonate, but that's just impersonating the look. So we want to kind of get the character and the voice and the point of view or whatever it is that makes that, you know, makes that character recognizable. I mean, some people, when they do impressions, like somebody goes, do a Brad Pitt impression. It's like, well, Brad Pitt plays so many different characters. Brad Pitt, like 101 is not really anything.
No.
But Gilbert Gregg, you know, Gilbert Gottfried is a voice that everybody knows. And it's, and he's a character that you can put on. And even if he's not doing his character, he's probably still a little bit like, you know,
like Natasha Lyonne.
But you know, but I think that there's it's just kind of like figuring out what celebrity is.
And sometimes it's just the one or two little things. You just have to hit a couple notes and that's it.
Yeah,
and that's
I mean,
all you can get out of a person.
Most
right?
people do, you know, if you want to do an Obama impression, all you got to do is that little
talk, vocal kind of fry. And go kind of fast.
Exactly. And that's all it is. And everybody can do an entertaining Obama or an entertaining Bill Clinton, right? Because they're just going to squint their eyes.
How about an entertaining Trump?
Nobody's entertained by him. He can't bring joy for anything.
Catchphrases and slogans.
Yes.
Stop trying to make Felch happen, as Peaches says in Mean Gaze. Mm-hmm. It's drag queens trying to come up with a catchphrase so then they can sell merchandise to, you know, capitalize and drive.
The thing is, though, too, is
can't
I think with some of these catchphrases, you don't know what's going to stick because you don't know what the audience is going to respond to. You don't even know what's going to make it into the editing room floor. Like when Bianca Del Rio was on season 6, she had no idea that "Not Today, Satan" was going to be her catchphrase because she said a bunch of stuff and she didn't know what was going to.
Well, that's the thing is she's successful because she just knows how to quip. Mm-hmm. She knows how to toss out, and instead of having one catchphrase, you should know how to try to have phrases they want to catch.
Mm-hmm. You know, because the thing is, though, too, is like, and you want to make sure your catchphrase corresponds to who you want to be as a drag queen. Now, let's look at Shea Coulee, who can be very glamorous. You know, Bougie Banshee was her brand, and now she's, you know, she's probably more glamorous, but yet her catchphrase is from like an old school marm. Why you acting brand new? You know what I mean? Like, that's something your grandma would say to you when you're acting like a fool, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make it sure it matches. Was that shady enough? Was it? Did I get the right shade?
Well, in terms of, like, you know, insults and roasts.
Yeah.
There's a skill. There's a process to do that in a way that doesn't harm the person, but actually celebrates them for their unique attributes.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a little bit of, I mean, celebrating somebody's, like, there's certain things in, and I don't roast people often, but there's certain things that I'm like, you know, when you watch a roast, you're like, we could have not roasted, you know, there's certain things that, like, you're gonna roast on, and certain things is just like, that should be hands off, like, in certain venues, I think, personally, if you're gonna have a good and actual nice roast. But
well,
just like making fun of people's making fun of people's, like, you know, if they're constantly doing the same sort of fuck up type shit, that's something to comment on. Mm-hmm. If they've got some like busted ass outfit all the time, or you want to just look at their, I mean, I love, one of my favorite things is like on a mic, just looking at people and roasting like their outfits. I did it as a character once for a Halloween show. And I just, you know, I did it as this, you know, woman from the South Side who was just doing trick or treat. No, what are you? I just went around like looking at their outfits. And this girl was in this poncho thing. I go, what are you going as, a smallpox blanket? And it fucking crushed. and
genocide's,
it's just like,
always so funny.
And I was just like, you know what? It's just hilarious. But I mean, it was just commenting on the fact that she's wearing a poncho.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not discrediting her. It's taking the moment and roasting a little. So I think it's,
and she's wearing a poncho for Halloween, right?
No, she was just wearing an outfit. But because I go, oh, you guys, nobody was in Halloween costumes. It was a Halloween show. Yeah, I should specify that. I ripped her a new one for just wearing a poncho. But I mean, if I saw you, you know, you're wearing plaid, I might be like,
oh, a lumberjack.
Oh, yeah, you might roast a little lumberjack, or you might. You call yourself wood, huh? Like, yeah, chopping wood, or
it's being
taking wood.
It's being slutty with an audience member, not really roasting them.
I think if there's a little power dynamic where they walk away without you, then it's a little bit of a roast.
In terms of like roasting somebody, they say that the way to start developing this material is to brainstorm a list of associations. So in terms of like insult comedy, It's a comedy that works well when it's written or developed or planned.
Yeah, I mean,
and
all
so,
those,
like,
roasts,
those roasts are all planned out.
They're all planned. Because they know who else is going to be on the panel, right? So, like, I know the drag queens do roast.
Except for the haters roast. They
who knows who's going to show up?
Who knows?
Madonna might call. Katie Lang might call. You know.
Katy Perry.
But like, you know, like those ones that they used to have on Comedy Central, that like Jeff Ross is, you know, one of those comedy.
Do they not do those anymore?
I think they do, but I don't really watch Comedy Central.
They do it infrequently.
Yeah.
It's big in the drag
world. But they happen.
World.
But I mean, like, and it's big in the drag world. So you know the panel. So you're kind of like, okay, I wrote this line for this bitch, you know.
Because Jackie Beat gets a lot of gigs just for writing material for these queens.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you know how to write good shit, A, you can make money. B, you're going to be invited to a lot of stuff. Also, you know, you just feel more confident knowing that you can slide in somewhere and just like roast, kill. So I think just being more comfortable with, I guess, a persona that, you know, maybe some of it's not good because they're scared of saying the wrong thing in a roast. And it's like, well, say something. I don't know.
Well, when in doubt, whore it out. I mean, that's part of it, is like, I feel sometimes when I'm interacting with an audience, and there's a lot of conversations that happen when in hosting as a drag queen, that you're just don't know how to relate to somebody who's there. And they're happy to see you. You're happy to be there. But you just, you know, draw a blank on what to say.
Yeah. I guess it's, you know, you mean just with an audience member?
Yeah, just in general, like interacting with the public.
Well, I think that's, I mean, it depends. It's like, is your character nice? Is your character a bitch? Is your character like, I'll fucking need you all? Like, is your, you know, because to me, when I'm reffing or hosting a show or whatever I'm doing and I have people, I am reading body language. I'm looking at faces. I'm looking at how their energy is, because I need to realize, okay, I can't come at this group super hard. I need to kind of walk them into this a little bit more with a little bit more of a smile. But if this group's rowdy, they need me to start to step up and, you know, blow the whistle a little bit and get them a little lined up.
Is it hard to be funny and be a nice drag queen?
No.
How come?
Because just because you're you know, dressed up, I don't know. You don't have to be a bitch to be a good.
Well, I'm not saying you. Is it possible? I'm saying is it harder to be nice than it is to be rude?
I don't know. That's dependent
nice
on the person. It's dependent on the person. I mean, I play mostly clean shows, but when I have an opportunity to do something more adult.
How do you draw that line between clean and adult?
If it's got swearing in it, or it's got sexual innuendo or, you know, heavy sexual suggestion.
What do you do as an improv artist and like you're in a clean show and you slip up and you go a little dirty?
I mean, for me, I usually don't because I've just trained my brain to not do that. But, I mean, there's times when I see something, I'm like, God, this is becoming like a rape scene. Okay, try, where is it? Oh, God, this guy's a creep. And the thing is, audiences are a lot more woke now and are a lot more audible about when something is not comfortable instead of just sitting there. Like, you know, I've played a couple shows where a guy will just, you know, in a character will make a move that... maybe, you know, a teenager trying to hit on somebody, but because it's an older guy and like a girl, people are just like, and it's like,
are you like gross?
Well, and I'm just like,
yes, and that's gross.
Well, I just, you know, I think we talked about like touching last time we were here about improv touching, but it's, I don't know. It's the audiences are seeing, when things accidentally go a little too like toeing the line, but I don't know. I'd rather make you, I can be very funny sexually. Those are my strong points.
Okay. For but acting
gross
challenges,
out kind of stuff. I can't.
Okay. For acting challenges where somebody's presenting a script to you and, you're just kind of going, you know, I don't know how to make this funny. It's like, and I noticed this with a lot of people who aren't prepared to do dialogue and just working here. Or, and you know, when we were doing live Feast of Fools shows, I always tell people, your character works best when it's a combination of two or three other characters. So in terms of like, even when you're performing for an audience and you're going to be yourself, if you can work a little, like for me, I try to bring a little Mae West and Eartha Kitt into everything that I do. And it's not because, you could see, but in terms of, it's important to bring, you know, other flavors into the way you deliver a line, because otherwise it's just going to feel very monotonous.
Yeah. I mean, I cater my language and how I, the words and the energy and the, you know, the kind of throwaways depending on the group, you know, I mean, I do this, you know, party hosting for a company. And if I've got a room at 10 o'clock with, you know, it's like I got 10 couples that are not my skin color and they're getting rowdy. I'm not going to be like, oh, hello, welcome to this party. I'm going to be like, y'all ready to do this? Like, I'm going to throw on a little something. I'm going to like, you know, I'm going to try to like meet them there. And you know what? Actually, and I'm sure, you know, I'm saying like, there's an ethnic voice and no. I get it. But you know what? I'm also like, I'm trying to blend in. I'm trying to be part of the party. And as long as to me, I'm not doing anything that's stepping over a line. I'm not saying any words and I'm not doing anything. I'm just kind of meeting people where they're
code switching.
I'm code switching, I guess. Sure. And I'm just like kind of playing into what that party is so that I fit in more. Cause I'm the one that needs to fit into this party. They don't need to fit in with me. So I don't know. I guess it's just sort of like reading the room, catering your style to who's there, because you're there to serve them. They're not there to serve you. So what do they need from you?
Mm.
And I think that's sort of, you know, as a drag queen, like what does your audience need from you at different shows? You know, like, do they need to see you as a real nice person that day? And then like, oh my God, you're such a bitch, but you're actually really nice. This is fun. Like, they see another side of you. They're more invested in who you are because you're more well-rounded. You're not just a bitch.
I'm curious to know what you guys think about in terms of comedy and, you know, competency in comedy and drag queens and how we can get training and grow in terms of being funnier with an audience. Like, is that even possible? Or is experience the only teacher? Or can this something be done in a workshop environment?
Yeah, I mean, you could do it in a workshop. I mean, you're not going to learn it from just reading a book. I'll tell you that.
No PDF.
You got to experience it.
You have to experience
it. You got to do it.
Have you heard about the Jamu stick?
What's a Jamu stick?
It's basically like, you know, you get a pedicure and they like pumice your fucking feet. It's like a pumice for your vag.
Oh,
first of all, if you've got calluses in your vagina, we have bigger issues.
Hold on a second. You can get calluses in vagina?
You can't. I basically feel like this is just a bumpy dildo.
Yeah.
This is like a dildo somebody had extra stucco spray for. And they're like, this will feel good.
It's for sale, of course, because all good things, you know, in this world, you have to buy. And so they say you can exfoliate your vagina, and then it helps shedding the dead skin, helps balance the vaginal microflora. They increase the sensitivity, and it can, you know, improve the aroma of the sex organ down there and the consistency of vaginal excretions.
Yummy.
Yeah. And also, it's a total whack of crack. Yeah. It's not real.
It says you can be like a virgin again and return to your former tightness in seconds.
By sticking this giant dick-like thing up you, you'll return to that vaginal state.
And sex experts are like,
please don't do
having
this.
Sex like this, you know, it's not going to stretch you out or anything like that. You know, it'll come back to your regular form. Don't worry about it.
But I feel like some CrossFitters with other calluses are going to be like, oh, I might have calluses.
People in like weightlifting and CrossFitting world, they fetishize calluses on their
hands.
Yes,
they do. They're like, oh, I got a rip today. Yeah.
You know, when you get a little callus on your thing, you know what's really nice is the weights. So how they have they're almost like filing things. You can just rub your thing up against the weight on there.
If you ever if you ever need Mark's DNA, it's at the gym on the little things.
Everybody's very excited about Lucille Ball being hooked on poppers. Mm-hmm. She was a poppers pig in the last years of her life. So she went through an aortic aneurysm.
That's how she died.
In 1989, 8 days later, her aorta ruptured and she died at 77. But to deal with all those chest pains that she was having at the time, she huffed on poppers.
Mm-hmm. Well, because she's, you know, she smoked a lot of cigarettes in her life. And if you listen to her voice at the end of her life,
that
was really rough. And so you can see why she would do that. But I think poppers back in those days were probably still amyl nitrate or something, I'm guessing. And was that something that was good for the heart? Because nowadays they're like, you know, if you're taking Viagra, if you're doing this, if you have heart problems, don't do poppers. But I think it's a different ingredient now.
Yeah, and so this is details are coming out from the documentary series, The Last Hours Of, Autopsy, The Last Hours Of, that's premiering in reels, and it has the Lucille Ball's last years on television.
Oh, are they doing other celebrities then,
too? Yeah, so they're showing the tragic ending to these glamorous people's lives.
Oh, we all have to go some way, right?
Well, that's the thing, you know, there's a lot of discussion about Mr. Rogers, who was the real Mr. Rogers, Michael Jackson, of course, and R. Kelly and all this stuff. And part of it is like, you know, I mean, Pete Davidson on Saturday Night Live got a lot of attention for pointing out it's not necessarily all these crimes, these heinous crimes that they may or may not have done. Or with Mr. Rogers' case is just the, you know, challenging our expectations of him as a heterosexual man, you know, this information revelation that he may have been bisexual. And a lot of people who worked with Mr. Rogers said it's bullshit.
They're just like, God forbid there's a sensitive, calm man. Mm-hmm. He's got to be gay. There's no way a man can be sensitive and calm and good with children that doesn't want to date them. It's like, no.
Well, he was married, right?
I know.
Did he have children with his wife?
No.
Yeah, yes, he had several children. Okay. But the core of this with Pete Davidson's making is that it's hard for us to change our conceptions of an entertainer when we really enjoyed their work. Mm. You know, and so he's like saying, it's like, you know, you love R. Kelly's music or whatever, but you're rejecting R. Kelly, but you're going to the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church has covered, you know, all sorts of injustices and horrors to dealing with
throughout
children
throughout the centuries, millennia.
So in a lot of ways, it's hard for people to accept a changing perception with, you know, when it comes to Michael Jackson, I'm a little bit more skeptical about it because the two men whose stories are come forward
and were the Netflix.
In the Netflix,
HBO, which we have not seen.
We have not seen it, but the everyone's pointing out who's defending Michael Jackson is that these two men were applying for jobs with Jackson's estate just years before the documentary was made. So
jobs they did not get.
They did not get. So they were disgruntled of a job application. This may have been a way to vindicate themselves, or it may be, you know, somebody who's dealing with trauma. Returning to the place of trauma to process it, to try to make sense of it. So I don't know enough about it, but you know, a lot of people are divided about this. Yeah. You know, Wendy Williams is like, Michael Jackson is innocent. Mm. And Wendy Williams is talking.
You know, I don't know what to think. I mean, it's weird that Michael Jackson, I think it's documented that he slept with 35 boys in his bed.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
Well, and part of it is like, you know,
and he did pay out millions. He invited,
regardless of whether he was sexually inappropriate, he put himself in a situation and put those boys in a situation that things could have gone horribly wrong and, you know, put him and his family and his estate in danger. So it was reckless, regardless whether he was harming these kids. He was definitely harming his family, his future. So either way you cut it, it's like Michael Jackson is no angel, you know.
Weird. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but this is the thing I was talking about with people. We've been hearing about this for like 25 years ago. I remember there were Michael Jackson jokes. Like that, I was talking about the dick. It like made me think of that, the dick clock.
Well, Eddie Murphy
when the big
Michael
hand
Jackson.
Touches the little hand, that's how you know what time it's in Neverland. It's like, this is a joke I knew and I heard when I was like 9 or 10 years old.
Why was Michael Jackson shopping at Kmart?
Why?
Because little boy's pants were half off.
This joke has been, I mean, we've been hearing these jokes for 30 years, right? Like, why? I don't know why suddenly
one documentary
is now changing everything. I mean, wasn't there a kid
well,
that they
Oprah
paid off?
Also,
wasn't there that kid that he paid
million? I think
that he paid off originally during that lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
When Michael Jackson died, I believe that father committed suicide, and then the kid later on was like, "Yeah, nothing happened there. Like my dad wanted this to be a thing so we can get money." Yeah. Like, I believe that was one of the cases that happened, but it's like there was the death of somebody and then like a son recanted. And it's like, I mean, I don't know. Weird stuff did happen over there. I mean, clearly, you know, but also I always think like Michael Jackson's like a unique individual and no one's ever going to be like him again. Like that Studio 54 documentary on Netflix, there's a moment where it's Prino's job. It's like 70s. Michael Jackson, and he's being interviewed, and they're like, "What do you think about Studio 54?" He's like, "It's just a great place to come and dance, and just a place to escape." And you kind of look at him, and you're like, "Yep, that says everything. Like, you've wanted to escape like your entire life, right?" And so, I don't know. I haven't seen the documentary either, but I just, you know, not that it's an exception for him, I feel for him as just an individual because nothing in his life was ever normal.
Right.
You know?
And part of me is reticent to even see it. Well, first of all, I don't have an HBO subscription. But also, too, I just feel like if I'm watching it, I'm going to be convinced as everybody who's seen it.
Right. And you're like, I still want to
believe, you know, there might be a chance.
Well, I also want justice for people who have been harmed.
True.
Yes. And you know, certainly, like, the FBI targeted Michael Jackson for a decade, you know, and came up empty handed.
Well, and there was, and I mean, this is the thing that I think out of it is that's painful to see is like, there was a Paris Jackson who was like cleaning spray paint off her dad's star on the Hollywood Walk. And it's like, that's
sad,
you know, or it was a post from her. It looked like her in the picture, but it's from her account. It's just like,
do you know in English, do we have a place where public places, a name for public places where people have sex?
The docks, the harbor, the bathroom.
the tea room. Oh,
no, we don't have
places.
Any formal name. Okay. It's not like we're like some Norwegian word where it's like, hugget a hugget a parka na fara. That means the place where your dick goes in something.
Well, in Spanish, they call it a picadero.
Oh, picadero.
Picadero. You know what a pica is, right? Like a pike.
Oh.
Right? The place
where you get a pike. I'm not sure about this.
I'm telling you.
Picadero.
There's actually a website based on it. So this guy who designed a website called Mis Picaderos, and it was my picaderos, my fuck places, I guess. places where I pike it or something like
places
that.
Places I fuck.
And so he would started listening a little map of the places where couples could get together and have sex in public, you know, whether it be semi-private. And so he started and pretty soon came up with like 12,000 places in the country of Spain, just to start with. And so, but now other people are adding things throughout the world. And so I looked at Chicago, which is where this podcast is based and where Meg Greenwald grew up. up.
Yep.
And where Fausto and I have both lived here since the 90s.
And let's see how many places we've fucked. got two. What is the attic?
There's only
one's
two.
The attic.
What is the Union League Chicago, which is a club, and they say that there's many nooks and crannies in this fine establishment.
For you to find
have
your
you
nooks
ever been
and crannies.
To Union
club?
No, I
have not.
I don't even know what this place
it's
is.
It's down the loop. It's like an athletic club, but it's also like a
Chicago Athletic Club?
Well, no, it's Union League Club. So it's like, you know, they have like a gym in there, but they also have like dining room and stuff. Like, you know, it's an old school Chicago establishment, but I think they are trying to get younger members in there and stuff that I remember. And then the other place is the Menards parking lot. Menards is like a hardware place.
If you're liking the Latinx community, I mean, there's a lot of people that are out there before trying to get picked up work. Is that why people are getting picked up?
Menards.
Oh, they do have
But I'm saying where people are waiting out to get picked up for contract work.
Yeah, if you want
to
pick
that's
up like a day laborer, you go
say.
To
work is work, honey.
I'm just saying.
Meg, have you taken this Facebook quiz? Your sex worker name.
Yep.
Is your first name plus your last name.
So the secret location at Menards is wait till Menards closes at 10 p.m. and a couple hours afterwards it gets pretty quiet in the parking lot. Park your hopefully tinted window car close to the train tracks and have fun.
Oh, interesting.
But I think you can pretty much do any parking lot, really, right? Can't you?
Well, some of those parking lots have them,
security,
you know,
right?
They have
cameras.
Those creepers that are ready to boot you or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're ready to boot you, though.
I got stopped by a cop once in high school with I was with a girl in the back seat, and a police officer came knocking on the window, and he just asked, the only thing was just like, are you okay, miss?
Oh.
And she's like, yes, I'm fine.
And you were like, ugh, I get stopped by the cops when I'm with women. I'm becoming gay.
For sure.
I don't need this police harassment.
Well, part of it is like, you know, for Mark, it's like places he's sexually active is he, you know, where he calls those places?
Everywhere.
Exactly. You got it.
What? But, you know, when you're in a small town and stuff like that, like
you
a lot
get
of times,
creative. I mean, I went to a summer camp. Do you know, we know all the places where it's like, don't check there.
Don't.
They're there. Don't. Yeah. And this is the thing. Now, can you reserve a spot on this website if you're like, you don't want to be showing up at the same parking lot?
He was saying he went to one place with his girlfriend. It was, I guess, his sex shop or something like that. And they had a little room for couples.
Oh.
And so he and his girlfriend went into the little room for couples and they were having sex. And then he goes, all of a sudden, more people came in and then they were having sex right next to us. So I was just like,
but not with
you
them?
Guys. Not necessarily. That's not.
It's like group acupuncture.
You guys go.
Listen, honey. Acupuncture.
If I go to a Bed Bath and Beyond, I just drop my pants when I walk in there and start huffing the sheets. It smells so good in there.
The candles.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, oof.
Huff, huff, huff.
Get me so excited. So elderly people are complaining that they might be dying without
seeing... Wait, just, that's it. They might be dying.
They're like, but without seeing the Mueller report.
Oh.
And so they're like, come on, Mueller, wrap it up. It is kind of weird that like they're taking so much time and I'm
with
just
this
like,
report.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, yeah, there's this monster criminal in the White House.
Is it allegedly. Mueller or Mueller?
I'm Mueller. Not sure.
Mueller.
Yeah.
Mueller. Okay.
Yeah. What did I say?
Mueller. You got me saying Mueller. I was like, wait, Mueller.
I was like, you know, the funny thing is like in my brain, I want to say Mueller and I think that must be wrong. It must be Mueller.
Moscow Mueller. That's what I'm going to call him.
And so, you know, a lot of people are just kind of like, come on, pinch it already. It's like,
well,
what
you know,
more do you need to do?
Manafort got, you know, sentenced to what? 47 months. Now we have Jesse Smollett's been in the grand jury indicted him on what? 14 or 16 counts.
16.
And people are like, how much time is he going to get compared to somebody like Manafort?
Who's done fraud for...
What people are saying, one guy who was a public defender says, I had a person who was charged with the crime of like stealing $100 and worth of stuff, and their recommended sentence was the same amount of time that Manafort got.
How much time did Ryan Lochte, or there's another person who went out of
it's Lochte.
That is Lochte. Yeah. Is faced for basically fabricating his.
He didn't get any time,
mugged.
But of course that happened.
He was facing 6 months, but did he ever get it?
Well, he was in Brazil, right? So
yeah.
It would have happened in Brazil, and he left Brazil, so nothing happened.
So he's not going back to Rio?
No.
It's like, suck it, Brazil!
Not anytime soon.
Yeah, when I was a kid, and we were like, you know, you are supposed to pay for a magazine subscription, mm-hmm. that were going to come after you. And we're like, we're in Puerto Rico. What are you going to do about it?
Oh, really?
So we would always like get those cards, you know, that where you could sure. get a magazine subscription. Mm-hmm. And we would just send them to like people we didn't like and write their names, like cuss them out. And
oh,
it was terrible things we did as 10-year-olds. You know, and it was like, you know, I don't know if those magazines ever arrived, but I imagine like you can that magazines still have those subscription cards, don't they?
I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, you just sign it up and start your neighbor. Please do not sign us up for any magazine subscription, yeah. people. Well, I did my time.
It's easy enough to cancel.
I guess so. Well, you know. Have you tried canceling a magazine subscription?
I don't get any magazines anymore.
You call them up and they're
also, like, it's 2019. No one gets magazines anymore.
My roommate gets New Yorker.
Oh, really? Well, maybe that.
But she's going to cancel it.
Does she know how to cancel it? Do you know how hard it is to cancel a magazine subscription?
It is. You've never had to dealt with AOL. Try to cancel your AOL subscription. There's elderly people like I talk to all the time. And they're like, I have no idea how to do this. And AOL is billions of dollars in their pockets because people frack from the 90s have no idea how to cancel their AOL subscriptions.
Well, they need to talk to the bank.
You know?
Speaking of subscriptions, we rely on your subscriptions to make this podcast happen. Please go to feastoffun.com/plus and sign up today. If you're having any problems signing up, or if you have any problems with your subscription, if your subscription got skipped or suspended, please let us know and we'll work it out and we'll figure out how to fix it together.
By mailing you at?
Mail at feastoffun.com.
Or you could send psychic messages mm-hmm. to me. I'm very good at picking them up.
If you look in the mirror and you say, Meg Grunwald, Meg Grunwald, Meg Grunwald, nothing will happen, but you'll at least know how to pronounce my name.
Meg, where are you playing out these days?
I play regularly at Comedy Sports and Laugh Out Loud Theater. You can
where
also
the hell's Laugh Out Loud Theater?
Laugh Out Loud? It's yeah. There's one in Schaumburg and there's one on Lincoln next to Martyrs, Byron and Lincoln.
Oh.
Yeah. But I'm also, I also host games. If you're looking to do a game night with your friends, GameNightOut.com. It's a BYOB experience. You pay per person. You come into our space that's located mm-hmm. in the Century mm-hmm. Mall on Diversity.
You mean that abandoned mall?
Yes, the old ghost mall.
There's like 20 storefronts.
There's an Aveda in there. There's a bat X throwing. There's virtual reality next to us. But
so what do you do with it?
So Game Night Out, you reserve for your friends 6 to 24 mm-hmm. people, and you come in and you get to have a game night with original games that a host runs you through. So I host people there and
sounds
it's
like
a really super
like
fun time.
Like a Trivial Pursuit?
No, board games, all original games up
it's
using stuff, your mind,
so
using your hands.
Nobody has an advantage.
Nobody has an advantage, and this is the only place, okay. original idea that's okay. in the entire universe.
But this is a games of strategy, like a board game, or
there's
is it
no
like
boards.
Actions?
It's
or?
Like, you know, like there's a version, we have some that are similar to some games you might have seen on like Family Game Night with Jane Lynch. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these games, are just to get people to communicate better. And
this is, I wanted to ask you about, since you're also a baby wrangler,
yes.
as part of your job,
yes.
for people that don't know, is like you kind of entertain the kids while they're going to get photo mm-hmm. shoots or do the commercials, that
yep.
kind of stuff, and keep them occupied and maybe get them to smile on cue or something,
yep.
right? Since you work with babies and you work with small children, I wanted to get your opinion on cheesing. where parents,
that sounds terrible.
Where parents or whoever videotape their kids, you smiling or whatever, and then they take a Kraft single,
yeah.
a single cheese, which I don't know if it technically is cheese.
It's, yeah.
Or it's a cheese-like product.
Yep.
I think it's mostly made from vegetable oil. And then they take that and they flip it at their kid and the cheese lands on their face. And some kids seem a little traumatized by it. Other kids,
so,
like, laugh at
so
it.
So, personally, I do a thing where I blow up a balloon and I let the air out, like, in their face to kind of surprise them. So, to me, cheesing a baby is just a game mm-hmm. for them. Now, if your kid is, like, laying on the couch, like that one video, and the girl's just like, I feel sick. She's like, I'm just resting. And then, like, the mom throws cheese at her. I'm like, less funny. But, like, a baby, it's just a game to them. I mean, if somebody cries and you throw cheese on their face, like, don't do that. But that's mean. But like, if it's just a game, it's not any different than a napkin,
okay,
or anything like that.
Do you throw napkins
personally,
at kids?
I mean, we'll play peekaboo. You're just playing peekaboo with a piece of cheese. But the thing is, think about it from a baby's perspective.
Yeah.
This is something fun and unique that might feel cool on their face, and to them, it's silly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, So, I mean, as long as the kid's having a good time.
The kids don't think of it as being humiliating.
No. I mean, you know, yeah, they don't see it humiliating. That girl on the couch, she thinks it's humiliating. But little babies, it's a game. Personally,
I
think.
Now, if I had a craft single and I threw it at your face, would you like it?
I don't really eat craft singles, so.
Nobody said you were going to eat it.
I know, but like if you threw like a piece of hard cheddar at me, I might be like, all right.
I have some fresh
farmer's cheese.
Oh, no. I don't know. How would you like it if I threw a piece of cheese at your face?
I don't think I would like it too much.
I feel like you could just cut it out and make it one of those Korean day masks. The cooling sensation of the cool cheese. These puffy eyes are gone.
Well, you know, in terms of like the cheese, some people are really upset about it, and they're saying that it's basically child abuse, and a lot of these people will do terrible things to each other.
I mean,
just for virality.
Filming it, I guess, is the bad part, because it's like, are you doing it because you're like, to me, there's a one where they throw it on the cheese and the baby is having like mm-hmm. the best time. Now, is that video showing your happy baby, or are you doing this to just get on this bandwagon? You know what I mean?
Like, to get on America's Funniest Home Videos.
And that's the difference. It's like, what's the reaction of the person that it's happening to? Mm-hmm. And that's how I see it. If it's like, if it's kind of funny or not, or mm-hmm. where I see it as like,
we've
straight
explored
up abuse.
This topic enough. Thank you.
You're the one that brought it up. I thought we were done with my cooling eye mask, and then he brings it up.
Jesus Christ, Mark. So this is not
I'm
how
trying to walk away.
Anyways, Meg, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about this stuff.
Thank you for having me.
I always enjoy these conversations.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, try to come
You're
up
like,
with
I wish I could say the same.
No. It's always a good time.
Always is a good time. I look forward to working with you on further projects, Meg.
Yes, you and I need to go and add some more dots to these maps.
Yes, for sure.
Do you think this is a good place? No, there's a bad vantage point. Okay, moving along.
I have to figure out how to add some stuff on there. Mm-hmm.
Dots on maps?
On the
for the sex maps.
Map.
Oh,
what's that place, map. What's a place you'd recommend to the crowd?
What would I recommend to the crowd? Well, the alley over here is probably a pretty good
one. Oh. You'll be waiting there?
Mark's bedroom.
My back porch.
Oh.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The rooftop over at 1701. Uh-huh.